At last, while his companions, one and all, urged him to save himself as soon as possible from the indignities that threatened him, he bade them dig a grave in his presence, proportioned to the size of his own person, and at the same time bring winter and wood for presently disposing of his body. As each of these things was done, he wept and said again and again, "What an artist the world is losing!" While he hesitated, a letter was brought to Phaon by one of his couriers. Nero, snatching it from his hand, read that he had been pronounced a public enemy by the Senate, and that they were seeking him to punish in the ancient fashion. And he asked what manner of punishment that was. When he learned that the criminal was stripped, fastened by the neck in a fork, and then beaten to death with rods, in mortal terror he seized two daggers which he had brought with him, and then, after trying the point of each, put them up again, pleading that the fatal hour had not yet come. Now he would beg Sporus to begin to lament and wail, and now entreat someone to help him take his life by setting him the example. Anon, he reproached himself for his cowardice in such words as these. "To live is a scandal and a shame. This does not become Nero, does not become him. One should be resolute at such times. Come, rouse thyself." And now the horsemen were at hand who had orders to take him off alive. When he heard them, he quavered, "Hark, now strikes on my ear the trampling of swift-footed coursers," and drove a dagger into his throat, aided by Epaphroditus, his private secretary. He was all but dead when a centurion rushed in, and as he placed the cloak to the wound, pretending that he had come to aid him, Nero merely gasped, "Too late!" and, "This is fidelity." With these words, he was gone, with eyes so set and starting from their sockets that all who saw him shuddered with horror. First and beyond all else, he had forced from his companions a promise to let no one have his head, but to contrive in some way that he be buried unmutilated. And this was granted by Icelus, Galba's freedman, who had shortly before been released from the bondage to which he was consigned at the beginning of the revolt. He was buried at a cost of 200,000 sesterces, and laid out in white robes embroidered with gold, which he had worn on the Calends of January. His ashes were deposited by his nurses, Eglogé in Alexandria, accompanied by his mistress Acte, in the family tomb of the Domitii, on the summit of the Hill of Gardens, which is visible from the Campus Martius. In that moment his sarcophagus of porphyry, with an altar of lunar marble standing above it, is enclosed by a balustrade of Thasian stone. He was about the average height, his body marked with spots and malodorous, his hair light blonde, his features regular rather than attractive, his eyes blue and somewhat weak, his neck over thick, his belly prominent, and his legs very slender. His health was good, for though indulging in every kind of riotous excess, he was ill but three times in all during the 14 years of his reign, and even then not enough to give up wine or any of his usual habits. He was utterly shameless in the care of his person and in his dress, always having his hair arranged in tiers of curls, and during the trip to Greece also letting it grow long and hang down behind. And he often appeared in public in a dining robe, with a handkerchief bound around his neck, ungirt and unshod. But above all, he was carried away by a craze for popularity, and he was jealous of all who in any way stirred the feeling of the mob. It was the general belief that after all his victories on the stage, he would at the next lustrum have competed with the athletes at Olympia, for he practiced wrestling constantly. And all over Greece he'd always viewed the gymnastic contests after the fashion of the judges, sitting on the ground in the stadium and if any pairs of contestants withdrew too far from their positions, he would force them forward with his own hand. Since he was acclaimed as the equal of Apollo in music and of the sun in driving a chariot, he'd planned to emulate the exploits of Hercules as well. And they say that a lion had been specially trained for him to kill naked in the arena of the amphitheatre before all the people, with a club or by the clasp of his arms.